Now here's a look at what's coming up on the John Oakley Show podcast.
In the year after this radical prime minister granted the decriminalization of crack, heroin, and other hard drugs in parks and hospitals, 2,500 people died. The overdose death in the 9 years of this prime minister have tripled.
Basically, we stepped off the edge in terms of a sense of a good, clean, happy community.
When will we put an end to this wacko policy by this wacko prime minister?
It's a great day for a podcast. Once again, here he is, John Oakley.
You're right about that much. Here we go. By the way, Pierre Poilievre was having a rant in the House of Commons today, and he was ejected for calling the prime minister with his policy on decriminalization a wacko and an extremist. It's just such a delicious moment. Can we hear it again, David?
When will we put an end to this wacko policy by this wacko prime minister?
Well, there you go. Because, you know, Toronto's looking for the special dispensation that BC got. And now they are relenting on this, certainly putting water in their wine. Why we're going full speed ahead, or at least continuing to promote the idea that this is the best way forward for the opioid crisis and those people who are obviously dying as a result. And the numbers just keep piling up. As a matter of course, they've got another example by which we can see that this has failed social policy, or a social experiment, if you will. And that is Oregon, who in 2021 passed something into law called Measure 110, the first drug decriminalization measure in the country that affected harder drugs outside of marijuana. And so they pushed for a health-based approach. But it's not far enough. It doesn't do the job. Kevin Mannix is a Republican. He's a state representative there in Oregon. He's going to join us here in a moment to explain why he's been against it since the outset. And now it's almost like an I told you so moment. Because they they've taken polls, and the results of the polls show that many Oregonians are also against it, whereas they might have been supportive initially because they bought into the rhetoric from the advocates. Let's get Kevin Mannix in here, state rep from the state of Oregon. Kevin, good to have you on the Oakley Show in Toronto. Good afternoon.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon to you.
Well, see, Oregon is a cautionary tale, and it's also an object lesson because Toronto is trying to go down the route that you did in Oregon with Measure 110. As I've described it very briefly, the overview is, you know, just basically decriminalizing harder drugs outside of marijuana. Why were you against the measure from the hop?
Well, at the beginning, I was against the measure because I thought the voters were not focusing on the decriminalization. The marketing for Measure 110, which was a ballot measure presented to all the voters, was based on, hey, we allow marijuana, and Measure 110 didn't change that. We allow the sale of marijuana, and it's regulated, et cetera, et cetera. But we collect taxes on it. And the Measure 110 crowd said, hey, let's dedicate all those tax dollars to drug treatment. Okay, great idea. And then small print, in effect, and by the way, we're legalizing street drugs. And the dynamic effect was that the word got around the 49 other states that this is the place to go, because you could be using any kind of street drug. And I'm talking about heroin, cocaine, we're talking about fentanyl, we're talking about all these methamphetamine, these drugs that traditionally have at least had some criminal penalties, and erasing those penalties for possession or use in small quantities. But small quantities the important thing was, hey, we've legalized street drugs. And two things happened. One is, folks came to Oregon knowing that they would be able to make use of these drugs and do what they wanted with them, even publicly, without any kind of sanction. And I'll explain, it truly was not any kind of sanction. The other thing was that among Oregonians, they began to feel they could more freely use these drugs, and so we had a higher incidence of drug use. And all of this had a significant impact on us in terms of those who were committing crimes to feed their habit, but also just the dissipation of their lives, because we could not intervene to help them. under our United States and Oregon constitutions, law enforcement can't just grab people. They've got to be able to charge them with something. So, and under Measure 110, why am I chuckling? Because it was so crazy. The most a law enforcement officer could do if someone was sitting in front of him on a park bench shooting up heroin or taking methamphetamine was to hand the person a citation for a $100 fine and could advise the person, by the way, if you call a toll-free number, the fine will be set aside, the toll-free number, you'll be given advice about how to seek out treatment. Less than 1% of the people handed those documents made any calls, and virtually none of them went in for treatment. But worse yet, we had no capability to intervene. I'm sorry, I'm starting to give you a speech on this, but I was heavily involved. I was on the joint committee which dealt with this issue. And our response is, we've made a mistake. And the voters from the polling that we saw recognized that we made a mistake and that in our society, we need to give law enforcement some authority to intervene. But as we developed our response, we also said we recognize the need for compassion. That is, these folks are addicted. Let's have a special kind of response, an unclassified misdemeanor, not a standard misdemeanor, so that we can have what my Democrat friends call deflection. And it's sort of a deviation from the course where you can be put into treatment programs instead of going into jail. And even on the jail side, we've provided that our jails have to have detox and treatment programs available, and we can provide treatment in the community. So we took a comprehensive response with this new bill, HB 4002. We got it through the House and Senate, and the governor has signed it now. Now, this doesn't really go into effect until September 1, so we're still dealing with the after effects, the continuing effects. But I've already noticed that there's a change in the community where people realize once more that we are going to be assertive about these street drugs, and we are intending to intervene, one, to save the people themselves, two, to send a message to young people, these drugs are not okay. And the penalty for providing beer to a minor was worse than the penalty for possessing meth or fentanyl. Really crazy stuff.
Kevin Mannix is with us.
Rolling there.
Yeah, Kevin, well, let me ask you a couple more questions if I can. Again, state representative against this Measure 110, which decriminalized all these hard drugs, and so the use went up. And to the point that you just made about just handing out this card that says you can get treatment options, it's just ineffective. 3 years into the project, 7,600 drug violations and only 200 calls to the number for the treatment. Anybody even curious about that? You maintain then, I guess, that treatment should be mandatory.
Well, yes, in effect, because we've also found that depending on what source you want, anywhere from 92 to 97% of people who are addicted are going to refuse treatment when it's simply offered up to them. They will not voluntarily enter into treatment. You have to interdict their addiction. And once their addiction is being addressed physically, then they can rethink and understand their situation. And we hope voluntarily continue treatment. But the reality is there has to be an intervention. And the intervention consists of law enforcement and others who work with them being able to say, you need to go into a detox or a treatment program, or we're going to take you to a jail where you're going to have to serve time. But even there, we're going to provide you with treatment. So the next challenge for us will be to ramp up the availability of treatment because it's I don't want it to make a false promise about that.
Well, this is a cautionary tale for Toronto. This is why, you know, we like to talk to you who are, you know, going through the throes of an experience here and seeing how the policy in real time has played out. Portland's declared a state of emergency earlier this year over the drug problem. Overdose deaths from opioids like fentanyl increased nearly 42% between 2022 and 2023, even though this measure is supposedly addressing that. Let me ask you what has happened to Portland? I mean, as the cautionary tale continues here, a beautiful city, how has it changed as a consequence of this decriminalization and even legalization in certain instances?
I think that we've seen a degradation of a beautiful city, and it's still it has the potential for recovery, and we hope to initiate recovery. And it's not just the decriminalization of street drugs, although that was a significant factor because, I mean, drugs were abundant and they were openly used, and that created the wrong kind of atmosphere for what you would want in a community. But beyond that, the effects of the drugs were such that people were simply camping out wherever they want to. And we talk about the homeless issue. There is a mental health element to that, but there is also a drug addiction element to that. And we were really not able to intervene. So now we've got a lot of a big mess, not only in Portland, but in other parts of the state. And we now need to engage in cleaning up the mess, but also helping those people clean up their lives, because we were ignoring people who were hurting themselves, but they were also hurting the community in two ways. One is the degradation of the community itself, because those homeless camps were not beautiful hygiene places. They were not. And with trash and with excrement and degradation of the environment, and this is a state that really treasures its environment, at the same time, they were also committing other crimes in order to feed their habits. And so we've seen a tremendous increase of crime in the communities. Beyond that, they also were committing crimes among themselves. There were those who were predators who were engaging predatory practices among those who were addicted. And that included going after addicted people in terms of sex trafficking, dragging them into these practices in order for them to make money. So to me, it was basically we stepped off the edge in terms of a sense of a good, clean, happy community. And we saw that degradation, and now we're trying to climb back out.
Well, and yet you've still got advocates and proponents who think the law wasn't a mistake. It just needs more time to work. I think as far as you're concerned, the jury's already in and has pronounced rather emphatically. Kevin, I appreciate your time this afternoon from Oregon.
Well, you are very welcome, and hope you don't take the wrong path.
I appreciate it. That's why we had you on.
All right.
Give us a little bit of, again, a forewarning. Kevin Mannix, again, state representative from Oregon. In a moment, we're going to talk about maybe alternatives to police chases that can end tragically. Next on The Oakley Show, 640 Toronto.
Heart pounding, get home, hug my family, just tell them, like, I'm alive. Like, they're thinking, what just happened? Why are you acting so crazy?
And it all happened extremely fast. In the distance, you can see some red and blue lights. And then you could eventually hear the sirens. And then, oh my gosh, it's on this side of the highway coming this way. But if it weren't for the police, there's no way we would have seen it. And we were able to get into the center lane and to avoid it. It came within, you know, a few feet of our car as it flew past in the fast lane.
Here he is, John Oakley.
Great day for talk radio. That in actuality from a caller earlier to the program who mentioned during last night's police pursuit of this white cube van along the 401 in the wrong direction, going westbound in the eastbound lanes, resulted in a tragedy, cost four people ultimately their lives. The three were two grandparents and an infant, and also the suspect in the suspect vehicle. That being said, many are questioning whether or not the police should have pursued. Are there alternative methods? Well, this is what we wanted to pursue ourselves. And Trevor Fishback is the president of Star Chase, who equips law enforcement with GPS tracking devices. Trevor, good to have you here on The Oakley Show. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I appreciate it, John. Thank you.
So the GPS tracking devices that you equip law enforcement with, maybe you can describe what these devices are like.
Yeah, it's a very simple technology that law enforcement uses down here in the lower 48, also up your way as well. And it allows the officer to be able to tag a suspect vehicle. So when they have cause, they can use the technology. And once they tag that vehicle, they're able to track the vehicle safely at a distance instead of a traditional pursuit, or instead of engaging in a traditional pursuit, which sadly, oftentimes you have the outcomes, unfortunately, what we're talking about today.
What does it mean to tag the vehicle? What does that involve?
So they come up on the suspect vehicle and they'll tag the vehicle with a Star Chase GPS tag, and then they'll fall back to whatever the circumstances kind of dictate and be able to track that vehicle in real time on a map-based interface, and then basically create a plan to tactically, safely, without incident, stop that suspect vehicle, you know, be it in a parking garage or at a, you know, once the vehicle stops, or, you know, bring it to a safe conclusion. You know, the technology, we've had the technology with agencies for a number of years. We have no fatalities on our record at this point from the technology. It really does rewrite the entire outcome of a high-risk vehicle situation, whether it's in progress or it's deemed by law enforcement to be potentially a high-risk vehicle situation.
So is it a physical tag, or do you paint the vehicle? You know, by that I mean basically it's captured in, I don't know, some kind of whatever electronic or digital painting, we'll call it. Yeah.
Yeah, John, it's a little bit of both, but there is a visible tag that gets affixed to the back of the suspect's vehicle. And that could happen at a traffic stop. It could happen in progress on the roadways. And a lot of agencies will use it. Everybody from, you know, highway patrol down to your smaller municipalities or urban cities. They all have, we have plenty of agencies across the whole spectrum of law enforcement that use the technology.
So how is it launched then, the tag?
It's compressed air, and the technology has also been tested as less lethal. So another great takeaway with this technology is it doesn't bring more problems to an already difficult situation. So, you know, as you know, and citizens already know, you know, law enforcement has to deal with high-risk situations on a daily basis, moment by moment. And the great thing about this technology is it has been proven it doesn't bring more problems to an already difficult situation. In fact, it actually calms everything down. And the data suggests that when Star Chase is used in a pursuit scenario, the suspect slows to within 10 miles an hour of the posted speed limit, and 99% of the risk is removed once everybody slows down and, you know, uninvolved become, you know, don't become statistics, and basically it promotes a safe arrest.
And yet, in last night's scenario, the police were giving chase. The guy was really going quite fast, you know, certainly beyond the speed limit, and in the opposite direction, which just obviously amplified the risk. If a police car can't catch him, he can't tag him. So, I mean, he's got to pursue to tag. Wouldn't that maybe increase the risk?
I didn't quite understand the question.
Well, all right, because you got to be in a certain radius to tag the car, do you not?
Yeah, there's a certain range. Yeah. So
what is that range?
It's a few car lengths.
Right. And, so the police car, yeah, the police car didn't get it within the few car lengths in this instant, because the guy was speeding at such a clip that the police car also, I guess, if it wanted to catch up and intercept, was going at a pretty fast speed as well, which might have compounded the problem. So in this instant, I don't know, would it have been feasible for the car, the police car, to get in a range to tag?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I'm just getting caught up on this tragic event. And there may not have been an opportunity to use Star Chase. There may have been in the early stages. But you know, it's really kind of, I'm sure everything's being investigated at this point. But
all right, Trevor, I'm kind of curious, because you mentioned the handheld launcher as well as a vehicle mounted launcher. Do they differ in efficacy and range?
Yeah, the handheld launcher has the same mission, to reduce the risk and give law enforcement the means to be able to track the vehicle versus have to pursue the vehicle. And it operates in a similar fashion, but it's much more mobile in platform. So, you know, it can be launched from the side of the road. And other means as well. So but it does have the same mission, if you will, which is to reduce the risk for law enforcement, for the suspect, and definitely for the community at large.
Again, Trevor Fishback is the president of the Star Chase GPS tracking devices for law enforcement. When you mentioned that once a car is tagged, it'll slow down to about 10 miles an hour. Why would that be?
So human behavior. If I was chasing you through a parking lot and I stopped, you would probably stop running and vice versa. So it's basically as much of a tool as it is, you know, leveraging just human psychology as well and human behavior. So, it, you know, we've been at this for a number of years. The data does prove out that that's the average. It also brings with it a 90% arrest rate. And again, fatalities and injuries are nil. And it's, you know, it's pretty amazing that, and I'm very proud that, you know, the technology and my team, and we have an opportunity to work with law enforcement to do things a little bit differently out there. And, you know, it's not a silver bullet. There are no silver bullets, really, when you're working with, you know, in a law enforcement role. There's no singular solution to everything that's out there. But when you have an additional tool like Star Chase on the tool belt, if you will, it's just like having Taser. You know, before Taser, all you had was a sidearm. So with Star Chase, we fit in that continuum, if you will, of options for law enforcement to use.
And you don't require a warrant?
No.
Okay.
No. So, when Star Chase is used, it's usually a crime is unfolding in front of them and they need to address it. You know, in a lot of cases, you know, up your way as well is law enforcement. You know, unfortunately, a lot of stolen cars just have to be allowed to drive away because it's too risky to engage.
Understood.
Well,
no, it sounds like it's a worthwhile alternative. Whether or not it might have been applied or applicable in last night's case remains to be, I guess, speculated upon. Trevor Fishback, president of Star Chase, I appreciate your giving us the details on this tracking device. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Well, we'll come back as a final offering. This is an area where, again, maybe the police chase just amplified the situation rather than, as Trevor was saying, you know, you tag somebody and they slow down because you don't have to pursue any longer. We'll come back and pursue that line of thinking in a moment. Oakley Show, 640 Toronto.
We're getting helicopters for police agencies around Ontario to support him. But this is a tragedy.
There was no time to scramble helicopters. It's a tragedy. The police are not at fault. The system's not at fault. The guy who stole that booze and chose to drive the wrong way on the highway is at fault.
Here he is, John Oakley.
Great afternoon for Talk Radio. Dave's in Whitby. Good afternoon, Dave. It's your turn, Oakley Show.
Hey, John. How are you doing?
Very good. Go ahead.
Hey, I sort of disagree with you. I think that the police, I'm glad that the police pursued the criminal last night onto the highway. I'm very grateful for that, in fact.
Why so?
I was on the highway last night traveling home with my family, and I'll tell you right now, could not see the van, could not see the headlights of a white van coming the wrong way right at us, but definitely caught the blue and red lights and the sirens, and I think it drew a lot more awareness to the situation and allowed people to get over and to give the van and the police some room, and I think that maybe... just maybe they prevented a lot more lives than we lost last night.
Well, when you say you couldn't see the van otherwise, it was still daylight. It was 10 to 8.
Yeah, there was a good number of cars there. There's some curves, some inclines. Couldn't see it coming at us. And then in the distance you saw, and it all happened extremely fast, in the distance you could see some red and blue lights. And then you could eventually hear the sirens and then, oh my gosh, it's on this side of the highway coming this way. But if it weren't for the police, there's no way we would have seen it. And, we were able to get into the center lane and to avoid it. It came within, you know, a few feet of our car as it flew past in the fast lane. And, I saw cars around me getting over very last minute. I think those lights saved a lot of lives. And I think it seemed to me anyhow, again, it happened in the blink of an eye, but it seemed like the police weren't exactly on this guy's tail. It seemed like maybe they were following from a bit of a distance. But there was police officers in both lanes, eastbound and westbound. And I think with their lights lit up, I think they did a great job, to be totally honest.
Right. It begs the question whether or not the individual in the van trying to get away would have gone at the speed he did if he hadn't perceived that he was being chased. Mike's in Rexdale up next. Oakley Show, 640 Toronto. Mike.
Hey, John, just a couple points real quick. The point regarding increasing penalties to try to, you know, make people not want to commit crimes, I mean, it doesn't work. You know, three strikes, you're out. When they have the death penalty, whether they don't, minimum sentences, none of it works. Criminals don't believe they're going to get caught. And all this nonsense about Giuliani cleaned up New York City by getting rid of the squeegee kids, he cleaned up New York City with the RICO Act. It had nothing to do with the hyperbole regarding these kids. Now, in regard to the speeding, if a policeman is chasing a charger on Steeles Avenue at 170 kilometers an hour, he needs to break that chase off. And I'm a big proponent for that. This guy was chasing a U-Haul who went the wrong way. I guess this guy had watched too many Baby Driver or Strahan videos, and he thought that this was the ideal thing to do. Plus, if you look at the timeline between the crime and when he entered the highway, there was no time to scramble helicopters. It's a tragedy. The police are not at fault. The system's not at fault. The guy who stole that booze and chose to drive the wrong way on the highway is at fault. Plain and simple.
Wait a minute. Do you believe he would have been going 180 kilometers an hour if he wasn't chased?
No. What's the point of this, Johnny? If it was a charger and he's doing 160 on Steeles, the cops need to break that off. There's no red light ticket.
Well, no, I agree with you. I agree with that much.
This guy was driving a U-Haul van.
No, I understand.
The cops are engaging.
Well, and they should not have. That's my point, and I think we agree.
Why not?
I'm sorry?
Why should they have not have engaged? They did not see the risk. If I was the police...
Well, they didn't see the risk. I mean, you're into oncoming traffic.
Yes, Johnny. Once that happened, it was too late. It was when he made that, when he went on that off ramp the wrong way, it's over. If the cops had stopped chasing at that point, what, you think it would have ended any different?
It might have. I mean, we're going down Speculation Boulevard, but he doesn't go the speed he does, I'm guessing, unless he's being chased. So then it gives people a chance to pull over and go, what the hey, who's coming on to him? He might not have, in the hot whips of panic, been veering all over the road. Again, yes, we're speculating, but I would have called off the chase. That's police procedure in most instances. It's a judgment call, and you call off the chase if you perceive that it might be more detrimental than actually not apprehending him. That's the story. That's the new rules that came in April 1st.
You're right, and I am more critical than not of the police department, but if I was a police in this thing, I'm going, okay, a U-Haul, I should be able to handle this. I get why he did in this one instance, why he didn't call off. And as soon as that guy turned on that off ramp, the deal was sealed. There was nothing that cop could have done. There was nothing anybody could have done. It was a tragedy in the making. In this case, I just...
Well, that's speculative, too. There's something the cop could have done. He could have just shut it down, pulled off to the side, or gone...
Okay. Do we know that he pursued him on the highway in the wrong direction?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, you've got video that shows that from people's dash cams. That's what's going on.
Okay, you know what? Then maybe I stand corrected. I was under the impression that it was such a short duration between entering the ramp and the accident. To me, it looked like we're talking less than a minute.
Well, it was a long enough stretch of highway that it led to this outcome because the guy was still barreling forward because he knew he was being pursued with a police car with the lights and the sirens on. However, all right, now that you understand that context, I'm glad to see it might have changed your mind as to whether or not the police officer was right to pursue. We'll leave on that note. Otherwise, a great day for talk radio in the books. Many, many thanks, David J. Hunter, technical operator, Michael J. Downey, producer, and to you.
Listen to the John Oakley Show live each weekday afternoon from 3 until 6. If you live in the Toronto area, just turn that AM dial to 640 and listen anywhere on earth 24 hours a day by going to 640toronto.com. Follow on Twitter at @AM640Oakley. You've been listening to A Curious Cast. New podcasts and shows are debuting all the time. So check back often to see what's new in the Curious Cast library.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.